begin, can I have you each say your name and your title if you want?
I'm gonna open up the conference that we were protesting tonight. So I'm gonna say my name and then back here, but I'll come.
Okay.
Angela Renier, Executive Director, University of Toronto Students Union.
I'm Claire O'Connor. I'm the coordinator of the Ontario Public Interest Research Group at U of T.
Danielle Sandu, Vice President Equity with the University of Toronto Students Union.
Okay. And can you... I'm just popular this morning. Can you explain what happened this morning from when you got to the Hyatt?
So there was a conference being held by the Monk School for Global Affairs, which is one of the newest schools at the University of Toronto, that was called Making the Case for Global Economic Governance. And there were a number of large speakers there, including former Prime Minister Paul Martin, who is touted for being the brains behind the G20 summit. So in the face of the fact that the rest of our campus is closing while the Monk School for Global Affairs is staying open during the G20 summits, students from student organizations across the campus came together to just make sure that they were not forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the deal is that the university has been collaborating with the Toronto police and effectively the Harper government to shut down dissent, or even the option of dissent, in the Toronto downtown core. Shutting down the campus is strategically for them a really good move. The proximity to the designated protest zone makes it a very useful physical space, and we know that police are going to be using the campus. They have sole access to some of the roads on the campus. And the idea is that if the university is dedicated to ensuring that there's community discussion about the G20 and its implications for people here on Turtle Island and around the world, then it has to be open for everybody to have their own events. The fact that the Council of Canadians was forced to move their event planned for this Friday in Convocation Hall is absolutely absurd. I mean, I can't get over the absurdity of this gesture of closing down the campus. So we went today to demonstrate that we're going to stay open and that we're going to participate in these discussions, even though they're trying to exclude us.
And for students and staff and faculty at the university, you know, we were not consulted in a decision that affects all of us. And to be displaced from our campus, from our homes, and then, you know, shut out of discussions around the G20, you know, this is a time where we could be having critical debate and discussions around the issues, but instead we've been displaced. And so for us today, it was, you know what, you can shut your doors, you can hide behind the police, but we will be out there. We will be speaking our minds, and we will make sure that we express our dissent with the G20 structure and its frightening parallels on our campus.
So what happened at the action this morning?
A group of us just 2 days ago decided we had to do an action, felt that this is kind of where we are, and Paul Martin is and has been one of the proponents of economic policies that are extremely destructive for people here and around the world, and really advanced a program that has imposed economic imprisonment on so many people. And we marched just up the, you know, did a picket around the campus, showed up at the door as they were beginning the conference, and made a couple speeches and made a fuss.
Walked back through the campus just to, you know, shed light that, you know, that these discussions and the matters that were being dealt with at this conference have a real impact for the students and the faculty and the staff that are on this campus. So it was very short, you know, half an hour. We just did basically a walk around, you know, up St. George, across Bloor Street, and then south on Avenue, and then cut through the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very positive, very, you know, an uplifting action. And I there was a lot of support from cars. They were honking, their, you know,
mm-hmm.
we got a lot of car honks and stuff like that. So I think, you know, it was really good to just, like, go beyond, you know, just have a physical presence to demonstrate that, you know, this campus closure is really upsetting to people and that, you know, we do have a right and we have a necessity to be speaking our minds on these issues.
And it was really a testament to the conviction of people on the campus that, at, you know, on 2 days' notice, at 8 o'clock in the morning, this many people showed up to participate. It's really, really
yeah.
encouraging, actually.
How many people?
It was about 30 people.
Yeah.
And did you come in contact with anyone who's taking part in the conference?
Not at all.
No, the intention wasn't really to try to engage directly with any of the participants, but more just to have a symbolic presence outside and to let, you know, to send a message that we were paying attention, you know, despite the fact that, you know, the doors are being closed to our campus, we're still going to be paying attention to what, you know, what these discussions are happening around the G20. And like, with respect to the Monk School for Global Affairs, it was publicly announced that it would be the only academic program staying open throughout the closure. And it does seem really, really apparent to us that this school, with its focus on the G8 and the G20, is really kind of the intellectual engine behind, you know, the Canadian summit, or the Canadian portion of the G20. And we find it really disconcerting that 2 days before the G8 summits, that business leaders, that there's a business leaders advising meeting
mm-hmm.
with the G20 leaders while our campus is being closed. Like, that is a really disturbing parallel, that while the business leaders are advising our elected leaders and, you know, our academics, you know, our public universities are not being able to be engaged, or in a very strategic and restricted fashion. So the fact that the Monk School will be reporting and basically being, you know, acting as a PR firm
mm-hmm.
For our government on these matters, for our government and business leaders on these matters, is really concerning. And we need to have a space to have critical debate. That's why we have public universities. That's the mission behind our universities. And it's a serious violation. And we're hoping that, you know, this action will send a message not just to the leaders but other people on our campus that we're ready to, you know, defend the rights of education and the right to academic freedom.
And I do think there's some legitimacy to the position that we're refusing to engage on their terms. Participating in the conference they were hosting today would be actually conceding to the logic of the corporate leadership that's and global leadership that's meeting at the G20. And we disagree with the fundamental premise of their policies. The invention of the G20 is this kind of broader, more inclusive body of global governance is to beat back movements that condemn them for being exclusive. And we have to be clear that they're not only exclusive insofar as this G20 only still accounts for this tiny minority of people on the planet, but also that their ideas, we are anti-capitalist, and we think that we need other spaces where we're discussing real alternatives, and we don't want to participate in projects like the Monk School for Global Affairs, which is a deliberate project to reinforce the legitimacy of global capitalism.
For us, students being shut out of the discussions, it's you know, it's that same parallel of a few making decisions for the many. And despite all of these attempts to shut out students, shut down student agency and student rights, you know, we're going to continue the work that we're doing, and we're not going to buy into these tactics to keep us from expressing our dissent. So whether they close the campus doors, you know, or try to displace students from a space where they could express their dissent, you know, at Queen's Park, we're going to be there no matter what, and we're going to say, you know, that we disagree with these structures, and we see the parallels that exist between the G20 and our own governing council at the University of Toronto, where students don't have a voice, and we recognize this, and we disagree with it, and we will do what we can to change it.
So you talked a bit about the Monk School, and for those people who don't really know much about them, can you just kind of break it down? Who are they? What are they trying to do?
Well, it's a new initiative, and we'll see what kind of academic projects unfold within it. The problem is that Peter Munk has offered his public endowment, $35 million, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the largest
single lot of money.
Private endowment to any university, so $35 million.
And when private people of his status make those kind of donations, there's an expectation that there will be some kind of benefit to it. And I think it's very clear that this is, if we can think about what, you know, this a good strategy would be, it would be precisely to use places that are associated with, you know, intellectual work, academic research, etc., to bolster the agenda of, corporations such as Peter Munk's Barrickgold, which is a known for its human rights violations, known for implementing policies and practices that lead to extreme ecological devastation.
Yeah, just to clarify that Peter Munk is the founder and CEO of Barrickgold, which is a mining company, a Canadian mining company that does a lot of mining extractions in the south, and has there have been a number of allegations of human rights violations in across Latin America by his company. And so it there's a lot of, as Claire had mentioned, you know, there's been a lot of mobilization against the corporation. And in fact, one something that really kind of highlights why it's concerning that someone of this stature would be providing such significant funds to a university is that academics in Quebec, in Montreal, who have spoken against these violations have in fact been threatened with defamation suits by Peter Munk. And so with the climate on our campus right now, where we're seeing the starvation of our arts and science programs and many critical studies programs, and the foundations of philosophy, the history and education, or philosophy and
mm-hmm.
in education, and many other critical studies. It's really disconcerting that there's that this kind of targeted funding and the implications for what kind of thinking we're being trained to do in our universities. And I'll stop there. I had another comment, but
I would say, quite in its simplest form, the University of Toronto accepting this endowment is offering legitimacy to Peter Munk and his practices. It is, in effect, defending him from condemnations from activists, condemnations from the Global South communities that are being devastated by his mining and other excavation practices. And I do think we have to be clear that the university uses as its explanation for accepting endowments like this the lack of public funds. And to have some perspective about the fact that Stephen Harper has let us spend $1 billion on security for this summit and not put it into education, not put it into housing, not put it into welfare programs. I mean, it's so outrageous. It's hard to wrap your head around, right?
And just in addition, this was the comment before, that after the $35 million announcement from Peter Munk, actually the federal government announced a $25 million endowment to the School of Global Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very, very targeted funding coming
mm-hmm.
from our federal government to our universities, which undermines the entire academic planning process that we have, that's a democratic process that are implemented on our campuses. And it also just begs the question when we hear our government say, well, there isn't money for education, and then bam, $25 million
mm-hmm.
to one single program. While, in the Faculty of Arts and Science, our professors can't even have phones in their offices because of budget cuts.
Hmm.
It's really frightening to see that the discussions around global affairs are controlled by, the Monk School and by forces like Peter Monk and who's behind Barrick Gold, which is responsible for displacing indigenous populations, for as Claire mentioned, grave ecological degradation, and it's so blatant to see that control, and it's really frightening, and it's also frightening that we aren't doing enough around it. There isn't enough mobilization against mm-hmm. that, against these forces that exist on our campus and that are controlling the dialogue.
So you talked about how they're allowing the Monk School to carry on during the G20, yet they're shutting down the rest of the campus. They're shutting down the event planned by the Council of Canadians. How else practically has the Monk School affected you personally and the university as a whole?
It's a really hard question to answer right now, just because this is a new project. I think our point of reference can be the Monk Center for International Studies. What is it called?
International Relations.
Sorry,
just the undergraduate.
Right. And I mean, what happens here is that every now and then there'll be somebody we recognize as maybe a little bit sympathetic to left politics, but for the most part, this is a place where people can go and do research that permits imperialism to persist, right? That permits the forms that the like neoliberal policies to persist without challenge and be improved, right? Like, there's also this farce that we're going to solve the world's problems by adjusting neoliberal policies, right? And this is where that intellectual work gets done. I mean, it happens in government, but it does come from within the academy. And I think the University of Toronto is a very conservative school and has always been connected to the state in these ways. And we really can't deny that relationship.
And there really, I mean, speaking as a student who has studied here and has taken courses in political science and international relations, there is no critical debate within those classrooms about global structures. It's about inheriting, the structures and just spitting it out and perpetuating them, as Claire said. There is no critical debate or dialogue about those structures. This is what we've determined to be the solution for the world, and we the little kinks we can work out. There is no critical dialogue about alternative means of governance at all.
And to keep in mind that this is happening while they are, as Angela mentioned, squeezing out programs where people are encouraged to do critical work. And it's something that's difficult to kind of pinpoint, because you could go case by case and look at what people's research projects are, etc. But it's pretty much consistent, and there's documentation of instances of this around the world, that when corporate money comes into campus, when private funding comes onto campus, it distorts academic research, it distorts academic finding, you have research suppressed, etc. And so we have to, think about the stuff that's being produced, but also the influence of these projects on broader academic practice.
And for those people who are listening to this and they don't like what Peter Monk and the Monk School and the Monk Center and Barrick Gold are doing, what can they do practically?
Join us on the streets, I think, and all the days leading up this week. But it's also about pushing for more agency, pushing for in within decision-making structures, pushing to keep those programs, critical area studies alive on your campuses, and making sure that you speak out against the decisions that are being made by the corporate influence and the administrations of your campuses.
I'm always into writing. I think that, I think we need to be watching, looking at what's actually happening at, at the Monk School. It's very new. It was just announced, all of these new endowments were just announced in April. So I think it's going to be important for us to just, critically evaluate, the academic programming on our campus. And if, in the new age, the Web 2.0 age, we need to be really interacting and pushing the dialogue and finding ways to do that. And if the walls in the doors if the doors of our campuses are going to be shut, then we'll just have to find other spaces to have that dialogue. And so whether it's you know, whether it's, you know, on the internet or, you know, whether it's on the streets, like, we need to continue it. We need to not sit there and think that there isn't anything that we can do about this. I mean, students are really the, you know, it may sound kind of cliche, but, like, students really will be the, kind of the future workforce and the future citizens and the future politicians and the future activists and, you know, in Canada, and we need to be making sure that we're participating fully in that dialogue. And I think as Canadians, we actually have a real responsibility to do that, because we actually do have a very important role to play in the international human rights movement.
And I was going to just maybe follow that up to say that, you know, for people listening, there's stuff that you can do that's like less of a deferral to people who are already on campus. We take leadership and should be taking leadership from people who are organizing on campus and off campus independently. And I think one of the greatest things about the action today was that we did feel in coordination, and like that we were connected to these broader struggles against the G20 that have emerged, and that this was us operating on our kind of our terrain, but in solidarity with the mobilizations that are happening throughout the week and the groups that are behind those mobilizations.
So any events or actions that are planned for later this week?
Well, there's the Toxic Tour today, and we definitely were in touch with those people, and they were encouraging of our action today. A couple of them came out, and I know the TCMN has a long schedule on their website, and I won't try and go through the whole thing. We are tomorrow being the first day of the university closure, and we're staying open, starting the day with a feeder event for the Indigenous Sovereignty March that's starting at Queen's Park at 11. So we're meeting here at the University of Toronto Students Union office at 9 a.m. To have some breakfast and a gathering. The Native Students Association is going to give a presentation, and then we're going to head over and join the march.
And there's the People's First March on Saturday, and so we'd encourage folks to join us. The student contingent is going to be meeting at Bloor and Spadina. We welcome everyone to come and join us, and we will be taking it to the streets, and we will be taking it to Queen's Park. And, you know, that's what global governance is about, right? It's about the voices of many, and I think that for anyone listening, don't be afraid to have your voice heard and connect with groups that are mobilizing within the city, just not to be afraid. And connect with others and make sure that your voice is heard, because that's what global governance is supposed to be about.
All right.
And people who want to be kept up to date on these issues, we do have a website. It's called nocampusclosure.wordpress.com. So if folks are interested in just seeing, you know, what's happening, they can go to that website.
Okay, great. Anything else?
Thanks so much. See you on the streets.
Thanks for the interview.